BITCO is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BITCO.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. Now, I'm in Mill Park in Johannesburg today to chat to well-known market commentator and investor Simon Brown. Simon is founder of Just One Lap, a company founded in 2011 that provides free and unbiased trading and investment education. He's also a regular contributor on various media platforms and writes regularly for Finweek magazine and is a regular on Business Day television. Welcome to the podcast, Simon.
Thanks, Duncan.
Tell me a bit about Just One Lap and what it does.
So it goes back to, and I need to step back. I mean, it's actually a domain I registered in the 90s. Just one lap at life, don't mess it up. And then I'd been working at Standard Bank, their online share trading division from 07 through to 2010. And we did education. We were doing 25,000 bums on seats every year around the country. And it was great, but it wasn't great if you lived in Polokwane or if you couldn't get to a center at 6 o'clock or something. And it was just at that point where internet was, obviously by 2010, it's 15 years old or so, but it's starting to kick in. And I read one of the Foucault books where he talks about how the internet removes time and geography. You know, someone's listening to this podcast at their point in time, at their point in geography. And I thought, let's take this and do the education on it. You know, and I mean, it was, YouTube had limits of 15 minutes and there was, you know, it's a lot easier today. But the thinking was, you know, investing is not rocket science. We can use the internet to get it out there, to make videos, to do events, podcasts, blog posts, etc. And just make people smarter about money. Whether that be understanding credit card debt or trading Aussie future derivatives or anywhere in between, and it's worked, and it's been a roaring success. It you know, pays for myself and my colleague Christia to drink wine, and I suppose most importantly makes people smarter, which is not necessarily because we're brilliantly smart, but back to the point that investing's not rocket science. We've just never been taught about it.
Right. Well, I've been listening. I'm a recent convert to your podcast. I see you're almost at 300 episodes on JSC Direct, which is a weekly podcast. So I've got a lot of catching up to do.
that actually started as on Classic FM. In fact, you were a guest a couple of times. And that started in 08. And then at the end of 2010, Dominique Insele, who owns Classic, and me, we were disagreeing on where it was going. I love audio as a format, but I didn't like the restriction of, you know, your Tuesday, 7 o'clock, 1 hour.
Right.
And I wanted to go to podcast where your restriction is, well, how do you want to do it?
Yes. So it's called JSC Direct.
Yeah.
It's a weekly roundup of what's happening on the JSC. 300 episodes in, as I said, or
280 this week.
Okay. Do you find podcasting is a good way to impart information on the stock market?
I do. For a bunch of reasons. One of them, you know, if we step back, when I started JSC Direct, our aim was to talk to the CEOs of the smaller companies because no one else was. And that's changed. Bruce Whitfield now chats to Subhu Shabalala of Adapt IT and others. So I've had to sort of shift because head to head with Bruce Whitfield, one of us is going to get a sore head and it's not going to be Bruce. I try, but so but it's a great way to impart information. It's a great way for me to put out my thoughts. I also prefer podcasting as a medium to reading. I can do it in the car. I can do it on the aeroplane. I can, you know, plug it into my Chromecast at home and stuff like that. So as a medium, I like it much more than writing. And that's maybe because I'm a little ADHD as well. But I like it as the medium. I like it, you know, I record it on Wednesday afternoon typically, and I periscope that live just because, you know, I've got 100-100 fiber here, so may as well use the fiber.
Right.
And then it drops on Thursday. Bit about the market, what I'm thinking, and then questions from listeners. And I love it. I love podcasting.
Yeah, no, it's a great format, and it's certainly massive in the U.S., and I get the impression it's really starting to take off in South Africa now as well.
My sense is, my colleague Christia launched one, which is Fat Wallet, which is much more aimed at sort of personal finance more than investing in a sense. And it's had so broader market, huge take-up. I started listening to Leo Laporte probably in 03, 04, Coverville and others. But there's been an absolute explosion, and certainly I'm seeing it starting to happen here. Obviously, you know, broadband, data prices, all of those are part of the equation. But an example, there is a chap who's a security guard at Sandton City. He downloads my podcast every Thursday morning and has slowly been upskilling himself. About a year and a half ago, he started buying his own shares via Easy Equities. And
fantastic.
That's exactly, you know, not that I don't want to talk to the expert, but I can also talk to a security guard at Sandton City, which without this medium, I couldn't have.
Yes. It was remarkable. I was chatting to the guys at Iono.fm, who are a big podcast platform in South Africa. In fact, I think you distribute your podcast through Iono as well. And their biggest, most successful podcast has actually been Soccer Laduma's, and it's been consumed by guys sitting on minibus taxis.
Yeah.
This isn't limited to the top end of the market. This podcasting, if you've got the right content, is actually being adopted by the mass market.
And it's the long tail, it's the niche. You know, neither of us are in particular niches. You're in tech, I'm in finance, but you can make it as niche as you want. Mm. And because of the, you know, no geography, no time constraints, there's an audience out there for you.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So we're chatting today about tech stocks, both local and international, and I've come here with a list of companies I'm very keen to chat to you about and get your views on. But before we start to talk about that, maybe let's talk a bit about the basics, because I'm sure some people listening to the show have never dabbled in the stock market. They look at what's happened in the U.S. with the tech boom that's happened there, which you know, we haven't seen any sort of price rises probably since the dot-com bubble.
Yeah.
If you want to get involved in the stock market for the first time, what are some of the basics you need to know?
Well, first basic is you need a stockbroker or an FSP. To you, they're going to be broadly the same thing. The mechanics behind the background aren't massively important. And I typically say to folks, just check what your bank offers. Now, if you're with Capitec, they don't offer. Some of the big banks offer better or worse, and have a dig around. What you're mostly going to find, though, is they offer a lot of bells and whistles, and they come with fees, and, you know, there's costs involved. And then I say to the folks, and then go have a look at Easy Equities, which is a Purple Capital, Charles Savage and his team, where there's no minimums, where if you want a NASPAS share at 3,000 Rand and you haven't got 3,000 Rand, you can put in 100 bucks and buy a 30th of an NASPAS share, and you still got that ownership. And you know, start digging around. And, you know, I always say to folks, get your feet wet. Don't take your pension or your granny's pension and get your feet wet. Mm. You know, take a couple of hundred Rand and get your feet wet. Buy something. And then I say to folks, and what you want to buy is probably actually an ETF, an exchange-traded fund. And that's a basket of shares. Because, you know, any one company can have, you know, can do an Apple or an Amazon. Or inversely, any one company could do a WorldCoin and an Enron or an African bank and go bankrupt. And for beginners, as much as you like the rush of it going up, there's going to be the periods of it going down, and that's really, really tough when you're starting out. So I've said to folks, just a, you know, like a top 40, which is 40 largest companies on our market. You can buy an S&P 500 ETF on the JSE. That's the 500 listed companies in the US, which are, you know, that is, in the true sense, a global ETF. About 60% of the business of those companies is America. The other 40% is, you know, planet Earth. They sell iPhones everywhere. And I said to folks, start with that. And so you can start watching and understanding things are moving, and we can start small. You know, when I started in the 80s, they wanted 20,000 Rand in the 80s when, you know, 20,000 Rand bought you not a bad car.
Yes.
And now you can literally, at a place like Easy Equities, you can kick off with a couple of hundred Rand. You can start buying some stuff. You can start seeing what's happening. Two things to remember. You're not going to get rich in a hurry. It's going to take time. And there will be this nasty thing called volatility. Right now we don't have it, but nothing goes up forever. There will be a period where we are going down. That period might be months. It might even be a year or two. Don't stress it. Markets have been doing that since day one in markets. It's a normal course of affairs. And if anything, a market that's going down is a market on sale. I mean, Woolies has a sale, we queue. When the JC has a sale, we panic, and we shouldn't. And it's easy to say that sitting here. When it's happening, it's another whole game in its entirety. But it has become so much easier. The hard part these days is your FICA. You know, and most of these online providers have made the FICA process easier as well.
Yeah, I suppose the, as a new investor, it's very easy to make the mistake of selling when the share price is falling, panicking, and then buying when it's too high because of all the euphoria.
Yeah, look, we 100%. And you know, been there, done that, got the T-shirt, lost the T-shirt. We were talking about brainware before you hit the record button. And there are many other stories like that. The truth of the matter is I can sit down and list you all the mistakes not to make. You're going to make them. Yeah. We're human beings. You know, the stove is hot. We touch it.
Yes.
Now we know the stove is hot and we won't. You know, we did that when we were 2 years old. We haven't done it again.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think in many of the cases, we need to make the mistake. The difference now is that when you make the mistake, when I was making the mistakes in the 90s, and this isn't an excuse for me, when I was making those mistakes in the early 90s, there wasn't a community, a forum, a process where I could go and engage and realize, well, okay, I'm not the first idiot to do this, and here's my next mistake to make. Now when you make the mistakes, you get onto Twitter or Facebook, your preferred medium, you listen to Bruce, you go to Just One Lap, you, whatever, and you suddenly realize, okay, no, tick number one. And what's the word I'm looking for? Not feel safer. I suppose it is just a sense of a community. And it doesn't have to be that you're having beers with them on Friday evening. It's just that there's a lot of people out there investing. We're all going to make these mistakes. The key point of a mistake is not to make it, but to recognize it and to be smarter for it.
Okay. Let's talk about international tech stocks.
Sure.
Before we dive down into some of the specific companies I'm keen to get your views on, we've seen this massive rally in the U.S. In internet stocks particularly, but it's quite wide-ranging. Is it too late to get into these companies?
So, some of these companies are expensive. The key point is that they're in different stages of insanely profitable. I mean, Facebook is insanely profitable. Tesla is not yet, and they're at the different spectrums. On the individual share points, some of them are. I mean, some of them definitely we can look at and say, ooh, there's some expense there. But the other point is if we look forward 10 years, and you know, that's an investment time horizon at its minimum, you take almost any of them. I mean, you take Amazon and what their journey has been. But the next 10 years is going to be doubly insane in terms of what they're – I was reading something today. They will now deliver a house to you. Okay, it's a container, and it costs $4,000. No prime delivery on that. $4,000 for the delivery. But you know what Jeff Bezos is plotting and planning is we can't even begin to comprehend. So in the short term, their valuations they're not at .com levels. Nowhere near that. Some of them worse than others, but we're not at .com levels. The market as I see it right now doesn't scare me. And I tell you what's going to, let me get a bit technical here for a moment, what's going to arrest this amazing run that we've seen, frankly, is interest rates going up in the US, which they are currently doing. But we need to understand that they currently got some way to go to get to an average interest rate level. We need the interest rates to get higher. To a high level, and that is probably 2 to 3 years at a minimum away. Now, famous last words. The reason for that is quite simple, is if investors can put money in an American bank and earn 4%, an equivalent for us in South Africa would be 16%, why go risk money in a market where you might make the same, but you might make a negative return? So the rising interest rates will take it off. So this run doesn't scare me. It's not a Trump rally. It's not based on Trump. It's not based on his tax cuts, which he may or may not get, etc. It's based on lots of money, really cheap interest rates, and companies that are doing very, very well. In some cases, we look at Apple, and I know we'll delve into more in a moment. If you strip out the cash that they're sitting on, that is not an expensive stock. You know, it's not a cheap stock, but it's not expensive. And it is literally probably 20% as expensive as it would as a dot-com equivalent would have been. So not scary at these sort of levels. But as always, you know, you don't go and take granny's pension. You're getting into a market. You buy some now. You come back in a week, a month, 3 months' time. You buy some more. You're averaging your way in. Price is correct. You just carry on with the process.
Let's talk about Apple since you raised them. They've got new iPhones coming out. You know, they've become very reliant on the iPhone as a product line. It's now the bulk of their profit and of their revenue. What's the risk in that? If I mean, we've seen some reports, for example, in recent weeks, not widespread like in the case of the Samsung Note 7, but we have seen reports that the batteries have been bulging. They've got supply problems apparently related to the new iPhone 10, which is going to be available in very limited supply later this year. How much of a problem is that reliance on a single product, and what happens if Apple produces a dud?
So, make no mistake. I mean, they, 100 million iPhones in a quarter. Well, not quite. 75 million. Paul Theron's looking for 100 million. They'll get there one day. I mean, just the logistics of making those phones and getting them into our hands is staggering. But there is risk of that dependence. They are, in some ways, shifting it. They've got the watch. They've got the iPad. Neither of them a replacement. Watch too niche. iPad. You know, you don't need a new iPad every year or two. You really can sit in it for 4, 5, 6 years and then pass it down and the like. Their sort of laptop and desktop line as well is perhaps not what it used to be. I got a new MacBook Pro in December, and I looked at the new one, and I went and bought the 2014 version because I didn't want that touch bar for an extra 5,000 or 6,000 rand. It was like, no, guys, don't need it. So the iPhone is their risk. There were a couple of things, I'll come back to it, but the couple of things that offset it to a degree, it is an ecosystem. So, you know, and the Samsung Note 7 explosion, the 8 has done spectacularly well, which is, you know, staggering in a sense. You know, there was no brand damage. Obviously, they lost a chunk of revenue at that point.
Yeah.
And Apple's made, I mean, I remember Antennagate. You know, was it really an Antennagate or not? You know, Steve Jobs saying you're holding it wrong. there's almost a fanboyishness to it, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But there's also an ecosystem. My wife's an iPhone. I'm never going to put her onto Android because she knows how to use her iPhone. Mm-hmm. She's got an iPad. She's got a MacBook Air. And I'm not saying they're the best. I'm just saying she's in that ecosystem. She knows how to go and do all the bits she needs to do, and she's happy there. And that's powerful. Their App Store is immensely powerful. I mean, the revenue they're generating from that with that base. So even if a phone were to be a dud, that would undoubtedly hurt them, but they've still got that insanely large user base who are buying the apps and all of those bits and pieces. So there's definitely a risk of an iPhone dud. You know, an iWatch or an iPad dud is of less stress, Apple Sure. Watch as they call it. It would be, to my mind, probably a short-term blip. I mean, to me, phones are, I mean, I've got a Samsung S8 and I taunt my friends by saying, you want to see the iPhone 11? you know, but in truth, you know, the phones have got to the point where it's incremental, the differences are tiny, and a one-off dud is going to be hurt them for a quarter, hurt them for a year. They're going to come back again. And people aren't going to en masse leave that ecosystem. And that's what's critically important for them. They are, in America, more than half of the phones in the world. The rest of the world, they're still, when you think about it, you look at Apple versus Android. Android wins globally, but when you realize that Apple is one player, iOS is one player. Mm. Android is, you know, numerous.
Sure.
Samsung leads the way, but there's hundreds of other manufacturers. Nokia's dropped one out just recently and the like.
I was in San Francisco not too long ago, and I was absolutely amazed sitting on that subway system that they have there looking around. I didn't see a single Android phone. It was all Apple.
In America, it is just Apple. In the rest of the world, there's some dogfights going on.
Yeah.
I suppose that it's a good point you make, that when you invest in a company, one of the things you have to say is, what is my risk? The risk with Apple is that they produce a dud. Mm. Will they? I don't know. And it depends how, you know, and there has been some alleged issues with the 8 and exactly how bad, we are unsure. Their challenge with the 10 is, as you say, supply, but Tim Cook is an absolute master at that. You identify it and you say to yourself, well, okay, are they going to produce 2 duds in a row? 3 duds in a row? You know, 1 dud is a lot. 3 in a row, highly unlikely. Remembering, of course, they sit on about a quarter of a trillion dollars of cash. It's more zeros than my head can do. So, you know, they'll carry on buying back shares. They'll carry on paying out dividends.
Yeah.
It'll hurt. And all the naysayers will, you know, told you so.
Yes.
And it'll move on.
Yeah, that amount of cash is phenomenal, especially if you convert it into rand.
No, absolutely. To me, Apple is not expensive. It is a amazing story, and it's an absolutely amazing company in the sense. I still think Amazon will be our first trillion-dollar company. Mm-hmm. I think Amazon will get there ahead of Apple because they've got more growth. The key thing with Apple is that it probably is largely ex-growth. They need another iPhone, another iPod. Mm-hmm. And
the watch wasn't really that.
The watch wasn't it, the iPad wasn't. And I don't know, I can't see what that is, but then I'm not Tim Cook. The one theory is that it was Steve Jobs, and of course he's no longer there, yeah. And therefore they're going to live off the iPhone forever. You know what? There are way worse things to have to live off as a revenue stream forever. They really have got the world, and into every year, you know, maybe every two, you buy another one. And you know, $800, $1,000, these are not cheap little computers.
No, indeed. So Google, are they more of a one-trick pony than Apple in your view?
Yes, they absolutely are. They're in the ad space. That is really their revenue. It's very, very chunky revenue. Their best protection is they've only really got one competitor, and that's Facebook. Mm-hmm. Their biggest risk is going to be around legislations and the like, particularly with the whole Russia story that we're seeing. That's always going to be, you know, what can happen there. I know, you know, they've managed it. There was a time when you would pick up sort of viruses and stuff around in ads via the Google network. There's been times when adverts have been deeply annoying and people would run ad blockers and stuff like that. And I don't run an ad blocker, I run a privacy blocker. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to track me, no chance. If you want to show me an ad, that's fine. And they've recently started a consortium with Microsoft and other big players to try and do good adverts in a sense. But they really are. That is their one-trick pony. The trick being is that, man, it is again a giant pony. In America, Google search is maybe 50 or 60%. In Europe, it's 80 or 90%. They are absolutely dominant. And from that perspective, there's frankly only one way to go, and you're gonna fall down. What's going to boom them is you know, the only half the planet's on internet. As that other half starts to come onto the internet, you talk about Android phones outside of the US. Those are obviously Google, and they put Chrome in it, and they put their Gmail, et cetera, in it. And then they've got lots of they've got Nest. They've got, are they Waymo with the cars?
Yes.
They've got lots of other, there's sort of...
Lots of loss-making stuff.
Yeah, which are moonshots in a sense. Nest not, but they've got those kind of moonshots. They had the robotic, they've got the AI. And those at this point are nothing, but I think the autonomous driving, I think, will be huge. And Waymo is certainly a leader in that space. But again, they just generate such insane levels of revenue with little cost at the absolute core in terms of, you know, I've used Google Ads. Their cost to them was nothing. I logged on, did it myself, gave them my credit card, and off they went and took my money. And they are getting smarter in terms of it. They're doing a lot in the AI space. I like Google. It's not expensive. It's probably on a relative basis. And when I say expensive, I'm looking at profitabilities, at price earnings, at dividends, and those sorts. More than Apple, but it's not blue sky. It's not completely out there and insanely priced. And again, the risk to Google is that one trick pony. But I'm not sure how they fall off that pony. I can see how it stumbles from time to time. To me, you know, if I gave you $100 billion and said set up a business, you know, a competitor to Google would not be your option. You would like, that's just silly. You would go and find somewhere else. So, yeah, risks, but I think an amazing company that is so integral into our lives at this point.
And Facebook, they've got a market valuation now of $400 billion, selling ads on a social network. Another potential one-trick pony. Do you think they, you said they're a hugely cash-generative business. Can they maintain the growth to justify their valuation?
So growth, what are they at now? 2 billion users, unique users a month, something around like that.
Yeah.
Which does two things. It values those users at about $200 per user. I don't know how many Facebook ads you've ever clicked on. That is a large amount per user.
Yes.
Make no bones about it. And in truth, we're ignoring the WhatsApp and the Instagrams and stuff like that, which are no revenue from WhatsApp and stuff, but which are in their own right really, really big businesses. I remember when Mark Zuckerberg, what did he pay for WhatsApp? $20 billion.
Yeah, it was some... 13, I think it was 13.
But you know, and yes, that generates no revenue for them. And it comes back. We can see how Facebook disrupted MySpace. Sure. I don't see how somebody disrupts Facebook, and never say never, but they're incredibly entrenched.
Well, Google tried and they failed.
Google's never got social networks, but yes, you know, and Twitter is very different and markedly smaller at about 300 uniques a month. My concern with Facebook is not the disruption, is that I break it down and I say, what are you paying per individual there? And it's $200 per individual. Okay, so let's say that they've got some other things out there as well. Oculus Rift, but that's not really a big center. You know, so yes, there's some Instagram certainly making money for them and the like. So maybe we say $150 a user. That's a lot per user. That's a lot per user. Yes, they generate large amounts of cash. They've got the mobile completely. I remember just as they listed was, you know, would Facebook work out mobile?
Mark Zuckerberg,
they sorted. Done. But that's a lot of ads I got to click on for them to make that $150 every year. And I think it's expensive. Yeah, I'd like to pay sort of $50 or $60 a user. And rather, you know, at that point, you've got no margin for error. They are a one-trick pony. It's adverts. You know, we don't click on them enough, and I'm not convinced that $200 is justified of it.
Yeah. So the company that I think fascinates me the most, just because it's been able to transform itself so many times over the years, is Microsoft. They've seemed to have been incredibly successful at transforming themselves for the era of cloud computing. The share price has been rewarded. It's doubled in the last few years. It languished for many years under Steve Ballmer.
About 15.
Yeah. Indeed, after the dot-com bubble, it crashed and never really recovered until just a couple of years ago. And Satya Nadella, I suppose credit to Steve Ballmer, he did kickstart the move towards cloud computing when he was CEO, and Satya Nadella has run with that. But what's your view on Microsoft, especially as they try to transition once again for a new era of computing?
Yeah, so I like them. I liked their ability to transform. And as you correctly said, Steve Ballmer did start it. Satya Nadella's made it happen, but Steve Ballmer was there up front. And you know, their cloud computing, Office 365. I'm a subscriber. Why wouldn't I be?
Yeah.
A terabyte of online
data. I do
data,
exactly the same.
A copy for my wife, my sister, and everyone. You know, how often did I buy Windows? Probably every time, not Windows, Office. Probably every time I got a new computer, I got a new version. Truthfully, way back in the day, I probably got a cracked version. Way back in the 90s. Now I pay them $1,000 a year, whatever it is. And when I first saw software as a service, I was like, you are kidding me. I am not playing this game. I love this game. I mean, Adobe Creative, you know, software which would cost me $2,000-$3,000 is now $50 a month type of scenario. And it's a company which I think has got proper innovation at the core. Again, they had it, they kind of lost it, and they've definitely got it again with their cloud computing, which is absolutely huge, with gaming, which is obviously the Xbox, which is getting a bit of a pounding from Sony, but you know, the PS, but that swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
Their software that they've got and yeah, small things like LinkedIn. LinkedIn, who owns Lynda. Lynda with the online courses and stuff like that. They've got a really, really quality set of assets. They lock customers in. You know, Windows might not be the most, you know, as dominant as it was once, but you know, Windows 10 was probably the last time we paid for an OS. I mean, you know, you don't pay for operating systems anymore. That's so sort of 2000. And they're going to stumble. Which one was their bad one? 8.1 was okay.
Windows Vista.
Vista, which I had managed to completely skip.
Well done. You saved yourself a lot of pain.
But I think they're going to partly skip that these days by the fact that it's just going to be iterations. They're just going to do the updates. You know, they're just going to trickle them in. And we, you know, they'll probably call it, maybe one day they'll do an 11. But pretty much Windows 10 is it. I think they're a brilliant company. They pay nice dividends. I think the pricing is quite fair. And they are on so many ways touching us. I mean, is it Azure? They're cloud.
Yes.
We're not even aware when we're touching it. You know, I happen to use Amazon Web Services as my cloud provider just because back in the day that was the only one. Mm-hmm. But the folks who are hitting my website, and they're unaware of it. And it, you know, so much has been powered and so much is moving up into the cloud. not in the sense of thin client, which was the dream back in the day, but certainly more and more happening there, more and more being stored. And Microsoft is undoubtedly back on the front foot and doing amazing things.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, we've got two Azure data centers coming to South Africa
next
year, which
it's
is going to
be awesome.
the last question I wanted to ask you on Microsoft, how much does it matter that they messed up mobile?
Look, it doesn't, because you know what, there are really two mobile players outside of China, outside of low income / China, and that's Samsung and Apple. It's fine. It's deeply unfortunate. I mean, if they could also have mobile, it would make them that much stronger in a sense. They're in the mobile to a degree, in the fact that you can get their apps on there and the like, and that's part of the cleverness. That, you know, the idea that, I mean, I remember running Office on a Mac, and I mean, apart from the fact that it was older than me, and now it's on my iPad, it's on my Samsung, it's everywhere. It's a miss for them. I think for consumers, three players better than two. I think for Microsoft to be that third player would be huge for them. That boat has sailed, and it's deeply unfortunate for all involved, except Samsung and Apple.
But in a cloud services paradigm, does the platform matter as much anymore? Do you need to own a mobile platform, or do you just integrate yourself with the existing platforms and deliver the cloud services?
I think so. I think that's exactly it. So there undoubtedly are apps on my Samsung which are back-ending into Azure, and Microsoft are owning it that way. Now, make no mistake, they would love to have the OS at the same time, but they're getting other bits of it, and they're going to get it from other directions. I mean, the Nokia acquisition was really bad, and the way they implemented Windows and 8 and all of that, they just never got it right. I mean, I have literally in my life met one Windows phone user, he worked for Microsoft. And it wasn't even a requirement. It wasn't even a requirement that he had a Windows phone. So it's unfortunate for them, but it is what it is. I think probably the right thing for them is to admit that they've missed the boat and move on. Instead of pouring billions into it, which is what they've done.
Yeah. But they bought Nokia, which was a huge risk.
But having bought Nokia, realized the mistake, you know, write it down, give up the brand, let other people. They're better to have done that rather than just continue. You know, at some point you've got to admit the failure and move on.
Yes.
Rather than just keep on pouring billions and billions and billions of dollars into it. And again, I think that's Satya Nadella, who's just like, you know what, guys, we messed up. It's deeply unfortunate. We can't go back in time.
Yeah. And I think it must have required a massive cultural change at Microsoft as well, because in the old days it was, you know, the Microsoft way or the highway. It's, you know, we run the platform.
Absolutely.
And now they don't run the platform on most of the world's end-user devices.
Yeah, and it's not a problem for them, because, you know, I'm running their office.
Their cloud services.
I remember when Satya Nadella took over, both Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates were on the board, and I remember thinking that they're going to try and baby this guy, and it's going to be a complete and utter disaster. I wrote an article for Finweek, and I've seldom been so wrong.
So bullish on Microsoft then?
Microsoft, very much so. And in part because it's almost old tech with some new tech. Yeah, Office, old. Cloud, new. You get that blend of. But the old is still innovative in terms of 365.
Yes. So the last US tech stock I was keen to chat to you about is Amazon. Their share prices also had a massive rally. Big retailer in the US and starting to expand around the world. They're taking on Netflix and video, less successful there. They're the biggest cloud provider in the world, Microsoft chasing hard. Is Amazon an interesting investment?
Oh, absolutely. It's probably, I mean, back in the day, you would have bought General Electric or General Motors for your grandchildren and put it in the bottom drawer. I think Amazon's that stock. If you told me I could have one U.S. stock, it would be Amazon.
Okay.
You know, so they are U.S., a bit in Europe, U.K. They're just going into Australia. South Africa, yeah, they don't even, I mean, you know, they don't know we exist. However,
well, apparently the Amazon clouds, the cloud data centers are coming to South Africa.
I want a warehouse. I on one Friday, order something from Amazon, a book and an SD card, and I order something from Takealot. The Amazon stuff arrives on Monday afternoon. The Takealot arrives 2.5 weeks later.
Sure.
They ship it from the U.S. Takealot ships it from down the road from me. Now, you know, I'm dissing Takealot, but you know, I mean, so, I mean, the way Jeff Bezos does it, his genius is, so let's take the Whole Foods acquisition, which on the surface seems completely crazy, but in practice, no, they're now in nice high-end areas. They've immediately knocked prices down. Your Avos are suddenly affordable again. They've got data, but more importantly, they're doing Amazon Fresh, and now they've got 470 warehouses around America in high-income areas to deliver Amazon Fresh. The whole Prime concept is just, you know, the move in, so you're on Prime, well, here's video. How much? No, you're on Prime. Have video type of scenario, stuff like that. And their space to still roll stuff up. Their Kindle, their, I don't want to say the name, their Echo. I mean, the Kindle is how I read. I used to get 150 to 200 Rand EB voucher from their Fanatics every quarter. Mm-hmm. I haven't had one in years. I'm not spending less on books. I'm just buying it on my Kindle device. I'm reading more. And yeah, they've got that ecosystem. And again, like Microsoft, you know, there's the device and there's the app. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have the device to buy it. Mm-hmm. In terms of profit margins, you almost get a sense that Bezos has got a little switch and he's like, so how much profit should we make this quarter? Market once more, zip, a little bit more. They're opening bookshops and people are like, this is crazy. But when you look at how those bookshops work, the data that they've got, for example, they know that if you like, people who like this book, like that book. So now they do that in a bookshop. They only have books in that shop that have 4 out of 5 or higher rating. So it's that level of information that they have. To me, the biggest threat to them is one day the DOJ in America basically going antitrust on them. Mm. Which is difficult. So I know there was complaints around the Whole Foods acquisition. The trick is the way anti-competitive works in America is, does it hurt, you know, is it bad for business? They were making prices cheaper. You know, and they've got markets. So they're going, they're putting warehouses into Australia. That's going to be a giant market for them. There's, you know, as I said, Europe, Western, mostly down UK. There's still a lot of road space for them. Still people coming onto the interweb. Still increasing demand for AWS and their cloud. And we haven't even, you know, they've got another tablet coming. They did the Fire Phone. Didn't work. Bin it, move on, try mm-hmm. something else. They've got the Fire Stick. Hasn't been amazing, but it's there. They are insane. I know people in America who live on Amazon. They have deliveries every single day. They use their Echo. They're ordering stuff. They've got their little buttons that you push.
Yes.
And they basically get stuff every single day. And it's everything from you know, your fresh to your toilet paper.
Yeah. I think I'd do the same if I lived in America.
If I could, I would. Without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. If I could, I would.
Yeah. Hate shopping.
Hate shopping.
So let's talk about South African tech stocks. I don't know if we'll find anything quite as exciting as the big US tech stocks, but there are some interesting local listed IT companies. Let's start with the telcos, because they've been through the wars. Certainly MTN has been through the wars in the last few years, and I think Vodacom's also been feeling the pressure of this economy. What's your take on those two big cell phone companies? Are they still investment material?
Yes, for different reasons. If we step back, there's obviously going to be a transition for the telcos, and that is ultimately then moving into just being utilities. They provide us data. They provide us tons of data at cheap prices. Mm. I still remember paying R2.50 a meg on Edge, and now I'm buying 10 gigs a month of data, and I think I'm paying R400 or R300 or whatever it might be, and I just... It's become ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. I will stream anything anywhere. I don't say to my phone, only do it on Wi-Fi. I say to my phone, if you need to, pull it down.
Yeah.
Now, I'm an edge case in that sense. But and they're going to go kicking and screaming. We've seen Verizon in the US buying AOL and Yahoo, all the old 90s brands.
Yes.
We've seen some innovation coming out of T-Mobile and others. But ultimately, they just provide data. And you know, they've been so disintermediated with SMS, for example, which was a huge revenue stream because essentially we were paying, thousands of rands per meg for SMS and Truth. Now we just WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. And you know, when my sister travels, when I travel, I don't phone on conventional. We WhatsApp call. I sit in a hotel, they sit in their Wi-Fi at home, and it's all free.
Yeah.
The point is, there's a large amount of money to be made in just providing data, and as an annuity income, as we use more and more, and you know, we start watching 4K on our phones and crazy stuff like that, you know, under 5G, etc. So they need that transition, and they are going to go kicking and screaming. They're not going to go quietly into the good night. That said, and it's going to take some time. If we look at the two, MTN and Vodacom, fundamentally different. Vodacom, much more mature market, dominant in South Africa. The other markets it has very much smaller. Mm-hmm. Also has parent company in Vodafone, which is strategically very important. Mm-hmm. Because as South Africa goes through different processes of its evolution, they've got a playbook. They're like, oh, Turkey was here 5 years ago. Here's what Turkey did, and it did or didn't work. So they've got that playbook from parent company, which is a big deal for them. So Vodacom, much more mature, much more ex-growth because the markets they're in are predominantly more saturated or very, very small. Lesotho is never going to be an exciting market, for example. So expect less share price appreciation and a lot more dividend payment coming through. MTN, the much more, and let's park the Nigerian fine aside. I owned MTN, and the day that news broke, I was on holiday, and I sold because management only issued a sense at 2:30. I heard the story on Sunday evening. Mm. Someone sent me a link to a Nigerian website. Mm. Anyway, the management's all been replaced and all, et cetera. Price is still under some pressure. But they're at 220-odd million subscribers, but they're in markets with a lot more growth. Mm-hmm. Again, forget South Africa. Nigeria penetration is maybe at 50 or 60%. A lot of their markets, which are emerged markets, which are markets that are going to have some issues economically, some issues politically, et cetera, but they've got a lot more growth there. So less dividend, but more share price growth. And then your question is, do I want sort of boring, stable Vodacom? Do I want a little more exciting in Lex Park, Nigeria, and a little more risk, but a little more reward, and then it's MTN. So it's almost a type of risk profile. And then some folks will jump in and take both. I have neither. I had MTN from the 90s. I sold it when the Nigerian story broke. And I'm sort of standing back and saying, okay, guys, I want more indication of that transition to the data position. But it's also how I invest locally. I only want to own 10 or 12 local stocks. And I want to own, you know, the best of the best that are not having growing pains and the like. And I think it's not going to be smooth sailing for either. But they're both huge, massively successful and profitable businesses and will remain so even in tough times. And even in, and you know, I talk about, you know, political problems and stuff. Weirdly enough, like in civil war, that doesn't hurt them because neither side wants to blow up a cell tower because that's how you communicate.
And they're certainly in a lot of wars.
They are in some war-torn zones.
And, South Sudan, Yemen, Afghanistan, Syria.
Iran for good measure and Trump's talking crazy about Iran again.
Yes.
So that's your point is, there's make no bones about it. There's some risk with that. And there are going to be, you know, the Turkcell court case keeps on popping up again. Nigeria cost them a couple of billion. There's an accusation, and those are going to continue. It's, you know, that's the environment in which they operate in.
So it's really your risk appetite.
It's risk appetite. If you want a little more risk, it's MTN. If you want less risk, it's Vodacom. If you're not sure, bit of both.
Okay. Let's have a quick chat about Altron. They seem to be a bit of a turnaround story. They got into a lot of trouble a few years ago. Robbie Fenter, the son of the founder, Bill Fenter, kick-started that transition. The share price has picked up quite a bit over the last 18 months or so. Mteto Nyati, the former MTN South Africa CEO, is now running that business.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah. What's your view on Altron?
So probably the stock that we're talking that I'm least au fait with.
Okay.
I like turnaround stories, but I want to see some evidence of turnaround first. Peter Lynch and one up in Wall Street talks around turnarounds being great investments. But, you know, don't try and buy the catch the falling knife. Wait for the evidence. And what we're seeing in Altron is that evidence. Now, shareholders who've been there for the last 5 or 10 years have really felt the pain, the losses in East Africa. And I mean, were there the Node box? Or
yes, the Node. Yeah, LTEC Node.
LTEC Node. And then there was the other one from Times Media, which was about as bad.
Yes.
You know, if you're a long-term suffering shareholder, you really, really felt that pain. But if you're a new coming in shareholder, that really now is legacy. And what you want to see in a turnaround is proper clean out. And that clean out needs to be, you know what, we're not, again, you know, don't throw good money after bad, Microsoft and mobile. So, you know, East Africa, you know, cut it. Just walk away. There's a loss. Don't throw more money after it. Don't do what Telkom did with Nigeria. Was it Netlinks or whatever it was and that sort of thing. They've done that. They've got management and they've got quality management, I think. Really, really good management in place. And it's always going to come with a little bit of higher risk. That risk is slightly reduced in the sense that the shares run a lot. And folks then look at that and say, oh, but I've missed out. No, if you know, a really good investment will over a 10 or 5 or 15 year period be what we call a 10 bagger, give you a 1,000% return. If you miss the first 100, 150, you've still got another 800 to go. For the math nerds out there, I get that my math is not right. I'm doing it simple. But you've got a lot more road to run. And by missing on that first 100, you've really reduced your risk a heck of a lot. When the commodities crashed, I said to folks, wait for the shares to double. And that would have put you into Kumba at 50 Rand, and it's now 250. So yeah, you missed the 25 to 50 Rand, but it was so much safer. And my sense is Ultron's now in that space. Mm-hmm. They've done the hard yards. They've done the risky stuff. They've done the difficult stuff. Still a long road, but as they recover and start it, I think it's a company. I mean, it was a stalwart of the South African investment scene.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it might not get back to it. I think it might not be as big as it used to be, but certainly my sense is it's going to again in our lifetimes be a really, really core investment to have. It comes with more risk, no bones,
sure.
But it's I like the turnaround story, and it's we're seeing evidence it's working.
So two stocks on the JSE that were really the darlings of investors for a long time were EOH and Adapt IT. They've both had a terrible year. Adapt IT has come off something like 50% since the beginning of the year, and EOH has also seen a similarly weak performance. I know there have been some reports around EOH and possible dodgy tenders and Guptas and all that sort of thing, which the management team has firmly denied. But these two companies have come off a lot. Are they now an investment top? Are they a screaming buy for investors?
Not screaming. EOH around 100 bucks, definitely. So it was up at 180, which was incredibly expensive. We need to in part understand the EOH growth story, which was to grow via acquisition and to grow organically. Mm-hmm. And the acquisition part just gets harder and harder when you're bigger. You know, when you're doing 1,000 Rand revenue and you buy out your competitor, your revenue doubles.
Yeah.
When you're doing a billion or 10 or 20 billion Rand revenue, who do you buy to double? And the risk is so that's their problem there. And we saw it in the last set of results. The days of their revenue up in the 30-odd% growth, those days are gone. They're down in, I think it was 18-ish% perhaps. There's about...
Still great growth in this
economy. No, still insane growth. Make no bones about it. But probably going to slip down into the low double digits, the 10, 11, the 12s. And that's fine. That's a maturing evolution of what happens with a company. So that's where EOH is now. And I think at 100 Rand, you're actually looking at a decent valuation, in my sense.
So do you think the market just got a bit overheated?
I think the market got very overheated on EOH. I think they hadn't quite realized the organic versus acquisitive stance. I think there were some concerns when Asher Bogart suddenly stepped down.
Yeah, that was very sudden.
It was a bit sudden. And there are, as you say, the other acquisitions floating. Accusations floating around. At this point, unproved. And let's be frank, we have a trove. We have a trove, and when I say we, I don't mean me and you, I mean the media, have a trove of 200,000 Gupta emails.
Yes.
If EOH was in there, we would know it by now.
Yes.
So there might be something, but it's not, you know, and I'm not standing here and saying they are clean. I honestly don't know. I'm saying that they are not McKinsey or KPMG.
Yes.
You know, because those we can see that we've got those 200,000 emails. So my sense is that it had got over ahead of itself. A couple of things then suddenly brought it back to ground. I think 100 grand is fine. As I said, you're not going to get the 20, 25, 30% growth, but you're going to get nice growth. They're going to start maturing, which means the dividends are going to start improving coming through. And they've proved the model. They know what they're doing. Whereas Subbu Shabalala and Adapt IT is the EOH wannabe. Mm-hmm. He's EOH of 10 years ago and needs to grow into that space. Started with InfoWave out of Ilovo. And slowly, it's working. It's happening for him. He, the last couple of years have been tough on him. They've got some education stuff, and that's fees must fall have hurt. They've got some oil and gas stuff, and that's been hurt, and the like. But I've got a lot of respect for Subbu, and not just because he's a Durban boy. Mm-hmm. And I think he runs a really, really good operation. And again, the share price have got well ahead of itself. And at the sort of 8-9 Rand, I think is offering actually really, really good value. Proviso, it is the higher risk than EOH because they've got to prove that story, whereas EOH has done it.
Yes.
They've got to do it and make it happen and the like. And I do think, you know, Asher did something that's astounding. No bones about it. Can Subbu Shabalala replicate it? If anyone can, he's in with a shot. You know, I couldn't. He probably could. I think he's someone who has that potential. And it might not be as great, it might be better, but certainly, again, if you've been holding, you're not happy, and if you bought at 15, you're deeply unhappy.
Yeah.
But I think current levels, both are actually offering opportunity. Again, EOH, probably your slightly lower risk, and therefore lower reward, more dividend coming through, Adapt IT saying, you know what, here's your bigger risk, your bigger reward, it's going to be a while before chunky dividends.
Yes, there was certainly a slowdown in their organic growth in their last couple of reporting periods, and I think that's probably what made investors take a bit of fright.
Yeah, and some of that slowdown is in the education space, higher education, where they provide infrastructure there, and that's not going to come back in a hurry. Fees right. must fall, may or may not be gone. But universities struggling in terms of revenue versus costs is not going to go away in a hurry. And then their oil space, same story. Oil price, you know, is it going back to 100? Sure. When? I don't think anytime soon. So we've got to kind of readjust our views there. They've got some financial stuff which is doing very well, and they do have a great management team in place.
Lastly, on local tech stocks, we've got a new listing on the JSE, that very rare thing, the tech listing on the JSE. I actually had recorded a podcast yesterday with Antonie van Rensburg, the CEO of this business, Foresight Holdings. Have you had a look at them?
I have, and I'm going to have to give a very, very deep listen to your recording. So I'm going to preface this by saying I haven't yet listened to the recording, so maybe I'm wrong. But I tell you what, when I... It reminded me of the 1990s or 2000s. It seemed to me to be something that was put together because it's a lot of buzzwords in the space, and a lot of investors will put money into it, and then they're going to try and execute a plan, and they may well execute it, and it might be, you know, a brilliant investment going forward. They may not execute it, in which case it's money down the drain. My concern always is. And this is not around Foresight. My concern around any investment is careful of the hype. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use a completely oblique example of Long for Life with Brian Joffe. You know, worth R5.50 cash, stock runs to R8.59, and now it's back at R5.35. The R8.9, don't chase it. So Foresight, don't chase. If you want it and the stock's been running, be patient. It will come back to you. And if it doesn't come back to you, then we have to sit and reevaluate and make a call in 6 or 12 months' time when we've got new results out. Most of my burnt fingers that I've had over the years of investing, and I've had a lot of burnt fingers, is because I chase stuff, because suddenly it was exciting, and, you know, Simon would buy, and someone would ring a bell and say, ching, ching, top of market. MoldMed, I hold the absolute distinction of buying at the highest, second highest, and third highest price that share ever traded. you know, so the key thing with it, and I'm not talking too much about the business because I'm going to listen to the interview, but careful of that hype. Always be careful of the hype. Don't be scared of missing out. You know, if you missed Tesla, there were another 100 opportunities to buy it. If you missed Netflix, same story. If you missed, you know, MTN at R2, you could have bought it at R10, and you felt like a fool, but now it's 120. Don't chase.
Great. Simon, thank you. Before I let you go, I do have to ask this question. Do you play cryptocurrencies at all?
No, I own 2 Bitcoin. So way back in the day, I do play. I have a friend who's a hacker. He used to work at UKZ and he's now at CSI, and he's a proper white hat hacker. Yeah. And he put me onto Bitcoin. I mined 9 of them back, and 9 took me, I think it took me 3 months. So it was easy those days. And I mined 9 of them, and I sold 7 at $200.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm whispering. 200 for the folks who didn't hear that. I was a genius, right? These things cost, and I kept 2. My view being that if there are only 21 million, if Bitcoin is the next thing, I got 2, I'm a player. I've also made my own. I got an open source downloaded Simon's super cryptocurrency, but no one would trade it. So the question with cryptocurrency, let's move blockchain aside. Blockchain is amazing, is going to be huge going forward, you know, distributed ledger, et cetera, et cetera. Cryptocurrency itself is I just don't know what to say about it. I mean, is Bitcoin expensive? I don't know. The biggest trick with it is it's not a currency. It's too volatile for currency.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going to Mozambique in 98 when Rand was crashing, and the Mozambicans wouldn't swap their currency for Rand. They're like, no, go get dollars, then come back to us. You know, so you can buy lots of things with your Bitcoin, but you wouldn't, because as a seller, I don't want to play that game because the price might halve before I could sell it. As a buyer, I don't want to pay because it might double in a week, and then so it's got to find a space, and we're in very, very, very early days. I think there's something there. I think we're going to start at some point seeing governments get into cryptocurrencies. Estonia probably first, because they're an amazing little country in terms of their tech and how you vote and ID cards and the like. But for example, China says we have the China coin, and it's legitimate type. And there's Ripple, which is trying to do that. Short answer, be careful. If you want some spice in your life, sure, absolutely. It's going to be as volatile as all heck. Buy and let's see, can Bitcoin go to 100,000 US? Why not? But it could go to $1 US.
I guess you're hanging on to those two Bitcoins then.
So I'm hanging on, for 100,000 US, not ZAR, 100,000 US.
Great. So, Simon, if anyone wants to get hold of you, you're quite active on Twitter. Your handle there is?
Just Simon PB.
Simon PB on Twitter. And do go check out Simon's podcast, JSE Direct. Which website should it
so
best go to?
Just head to justonelap.com /JSE Direct if you want to find it direct. It drops on Thursday just after midnight and is on every catcher. If you've got a device on your phone that takes XML RSS feeds, it works.
So just search JSE Direct, one word.
JSE Direct. Two words now.
Two words.
Apparently two words is the new hip. According to my hip people.
Simon Brown is investor, trader, stock market educator, market commentator, and founder of Just One Lap. Thank you for talking to Tech Central today.
Pleasure, Duncan.